Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
I can't hear you, Michael.
Hi. Why not turn off the mute? And it always helps when the voice of God comes in and says, I can't hear you. You know, God's got to hear you, okay? Thank you, BL. All right, well, anyway, hi. And this is our 82nd beginning of Dissipation of Glamour webinar. And yeah, we'll just have, I'm sorry that it was not possible last week. Many things were happening, and also adjustment to a new broadcast format, which I think is working quite well in terms of the quality of what's being heard. In the chat box, there are a couple of things of importance. I have a link there for most, if not all, of our broadcasts in the Ask program and for other full moons and things of that nature. And then also, Olivia may, in just a few minutes, want to say something about the new program that has been created. And there are also some links there, I think. So there it is. And I'll give you that chance, Olivia, in just a few minutes. So let's just go on. I did want to say, you know, in terms of this business of mastering the astral body, which is so much about what A Treatise on White Magic is about, I'm making a slow and steady progress, and we have now about 24 programs on the rules for magic on the astral plane, and they you can find them at the link. Well, you just find them, Moria Federation Esoteric Education. You can find them there on YouTube. And you may be interested. And then, you know, still, I think, I'm not sure, I'd have to ask Joe, you know, maybe slowly we're getting these things on YouTube. But at least if you go to Makara site, there are 50 programs there that deal with the introduction to the book of A Treatise on White Magic. And then there's also all the commentary on the rules for magic on the mental plane. So we're gradually making our way through this wonderful book. And basically what we've got there, you know, is a book of some 600 and something pages. And one of the rules we're on right now, rule number 10, is 170 pages long. So it's a really, you know, it's a great book. I'm just enjoying going through it so much more. And I think that you will benefit as well. So just a little bit of an alignment here for us before we begin our reading, which today is as new to me as it is to you. That's how busy things have been. So the group soul is that which we want to feel, and we want to feel that sentiently in that body of sentiency, which we call the astral body. It's the name DK prefers, the sentient vehicle. And try to feel that Christ consciousness, that soul consciousness in the astral body, in the sentient body. And this will unify us and bring in the good energies which will help dissipate that swirl of untruth we call glamour and which is so rife today and which needs to be dissipated as we work within as esoteric students. We need to cast it out. It's a big job. The forces of obstruction the Black Lodge, you know, the forces of obstruction, they work at augmenting glamour. That's their major method of gaining control and making our efforts useless, and we can't let that happen. If there are enough disciples working in the right way, we stand a fighting chance of overcoming that obstructive influence. So that's what we'll do, continuing our reading and so forth. And let's just have the sound of an om. We'll sound on a one of the second ray notes. That will get us lined up and tuned up. And I just want to, you know, in the beginning, I just try to welcome you a little bit. And when, if you come later, not much I can do. It's just to acknowledge, you know, that I'll see you there. So hi, Alexandra, Angela, Anne, Anna, Anna Marie, Annette, Antoinette, Bianca, Bibi, Carl, Catherine, Deborah, Duana, Frederick, Gregory, Gretchen, Helen, Jean-Pierre, Joan, Joanne, John, Yopie, Karen, Catherine, Keith, Laura, Lisa, Margot, Marissa, Martha, Michael, Nienke, Olivia, Risto, Stacia, Stephen, Susan, Suzanne, Tuya, Veronique, Winnie, Yvonne, Zenaide, and BL and Joe are on the technical side here, backing us up. So we have a nice representative group here tonight. We should be able to do some good work. As I say, this is sort of sponsored by Olivia, Tuya, and myself, and we welcome you to the ongoing glamour work. And Olivia, I wonder if you want to say something about the program that you have recently completed and is in the chat box. This might be an opportunity for you if you'd like to.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So the Death and Dying Well video is a new creation for the awakening public to help overcome their fear of death, which, as we know, DK said is the number one glamour. So the video can help them understand more about death and the dying process. And then they can have some reassurance and comfort and hopefully can live more fully and joyfully after that. You know, we all have family members and friends who are not into the esoteric work. So this video can be very helpful for them. I use a lot of DK's words in it, so it's also a good introduction to the Master DK. And the link you've been given is a special preview link now for the Death and Dying Well video. It's the lead video for the new season launch of the TV channel. And the Spiritual Life TV channel will have 16 new videos with 5 more videos coming up later. And it will launch around the Virgo full moon time. You know, please subscribe if you can to our YouTube channel link, because this is something new for us. We're new to YouTube, and this will be a way for you to be notified. So, excuse me. So, if you can, share with friends and sign up to our new YouTube channel. And hopefully this will be of help. Excuse me. Hopefully this will be of help. I'm thirsty.
Excellent, Libby. All right, we're looking forward to that. And Justin is involved there, and he's a really good filmmaker. So we look for good things there. And basically, you know, the YouTube is the place where we seem to have, a number of us have seemed to have switched to. It's got a very wide broadband. It's got a great traffic. And, you know, it's very useful for getting the word out. So that's really
right,
the place.
Right.
Really the
and
place
it's, and it's really key for reaching the awakening public. And I think we need to put a lot of our effort there to get as many people into the stream as we can, you know, before 2025.
Right. Excellent. Excellent, Libby. Thank you. and we have also, as I said, the Maury Federation YouTube link is there as well. But just go to Maury Federation Esoteric Education and you'll find a lot of things. So we continue our work of teaching and spreading the knowledge of the ageless wisdom and the practice and the service involved with the ageless wisdom. Okay. Thank you. Now, let's see where we are here. All right, this is where we're continuing. And, you know, what we're trying to do also, we had a Science of Triangles webinar. Well, it was morning for us. It was probably night for quite a number of you. And the Science of Triangles, and we're really getting into the more cosmic systemic aspect of the triangles. We had a little triangle meditation that Tuya led also in this. So we go from the very high cosmic presentation into the very practical aspect of it. So you may, you know, want to participate in that. And that is a webinar with a certain link. And maybe Joe or BL, you can put that link in there for the Science of Triangles. I would appreciate it. And so far, the way it's been going is most of the people in maybe Europe and the South Pacific that have been able to take advantage of it because the United States is asleep. So let's see if we can add a little bit there and make it available for people in South America and also in the United States, because it's very interesting material from esoteric astrology. And I don't know, I'm still thinking about that wonderful chart where it starts with the Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades, and goes all the way down until our chakras are affected. So it's really from heaven to earth, and I think very much worth considering. Okay, friends, so now we go on, and I really, you know, let's see what is possible to say here. All right, let's see what is possible to say. Yeah, we've had the four keynotes to the solution of the problem of glamour. Intuition, illumination, inspiration, and the angel of the presence. So intuition of the, well, it's the Buddhic factor. Illumination is the mental factor. Inspiration, you can say it operates to overcome Maya. Intuition overcomes illusion. Illumination overcomes glamour. Inspiration overcomes Maya. And the angel of the presence is the whole thing that faces you, the unredeemed personality, and sometimes a very powerful personality, which is very effective and is hard to get beyond. So in the process of meditation, DK does assign some signs of the zodiac to these. The intuition, well, he doesn't so much deal with that, but it's scorpionic in a certain sense, and it relates to the Buddhic plane. Illumination is also Scorpio, inspiration Sagittarius, and the angel of the presence that you have to get beyond in order to achieve initiation is Capricornian. Do take notes as you go along, because when we have the opportunity to discuss things a little bit, you may want to have something written down, or if you like, if you want to put something into the question bar while we're talking, you can do that. And then later, when I start with the reading, we'll go there and see what you've said and what is of interest to you. Like I say, it can be in relation to what we discuss, step by step, or in general, anything that has to do with occultism. So, you know, this is our opportunity to work in that way. I'm going to make this just a a tad bigger, and there we go. All right, so let's see what Master, whoa, not, that's too big, isn't it? Let's see what Master DK has to say here. This is not a valid number, thank you. My computer speaks to me, but not always in the kindest tones. Okay, I would call your attention to the fact that the whole problem concerns itself with the use or misuse of force or energy. Energy is generally of the soul, force is more of the personality, but that's not sufficient. Sometimes I think that energy is very spherically radiated and that force is a directed factor under the impulse of the will and is usually directed from a higher to a lower. So we're dealing with the, obviously, with the use or misuse of force or energy. We're living in a sea of energies, and if we recognize them and properly direct them, then okay, we can live the successful spiritual life of service. And that much will clear up in your minds if you realize three things. This is not an easy subject, so we are looking for clarity. That the average man in everyday life and the aspirant upon the path of probation or purification works with the forces of life on the three planes of human endeavor plus the principle of life itself. You can never get away from the principle of life. It's the great etheric substratum, but it's even more than that. It is pure being that makes everything appear and makes everything possible. So here we're dealing with the, whoa, that's not it. I had that before, Livy. That was from your, that was from the forthcoming video. And now I'm going to just see if I can't, there we go. And so this, we're dealing here with the average person and even the aspirant, and we're dealing with the 18 lower, 18 lower subplanes, which is pretty much the dense physical body of the planetary logos. I would say that the higher mind is in a category all of its own. It's kind of an etheric area of the mental plane, and it is physical when you think about the solar logos, but maybe it begins to be etheric when you think about the planetary logos. Next thing, that the disciple begins to discriminate between the forces and energy. Energy is a higher thing, in DK's estimation. Upon the path of discipleship, he begins to work with soul energy, and this eventually dominates the forces. This is what we all want. We want to be able to do this and not just theorize about it. I remember a time in the Arcane School, you know, it basically said, well, look, you've gathered a lot of theory, okay, now let's put it into practice. And it was a whole change in the approach. So upon the path of discipleship, which is a real entry upon the fixed cross and pretty much begins at the first initiation, although, you know, there are different starting points, but let's just say by the first initiation, you really know you're a disciple, even if not yet an accepted disciple. We work with soul energy, and you know, how many of us can say we know or recognize those moments when we actually work with soul energy? It is a departure. It's a departure even from the well-trained mind, you know. You know, people like myself and others, we work in the mental plane. Is that the same kind of thing as real soul energy? Unless we work on the higher mental plane and bring it through in a recognizable manner and express it in service, it's just talk, okay? That the initiate works upon the path of initiation. Well, okay, you know, there's the path of probationary initiation, first and second initiations, and then the real initiation path, initiation three and onward. That the initiate works upon the path of initiation with energy and learns to distinguish between the energy of life and the energies of the soul and the forces of the phenomenal world. I think you get that right. The energy of life has everything to do with the monad and partially with the triad, and the energies of the soul has to do with our egoic lotus causal body, and sort of as much of the solar angel as can be put into the causal body egoic lotus without breaking the whole thing up. Solar angel is too strong to confine its entire being to our causal body. So having pervaded the entire universe of the causal body with a fragment of myself, I, the solar angel, remain. So the energies of the soul, and then definitely forces, the forces of the phenomenal world in the planetary sense, excuse me, the lower 18 subplanes. If we were dealing with the solar sense, even the causal body would be considered phenomenal rather than noumenal, you know. So we've got to distinguish between phenomena and noumena. And the noumena are the hidden patterns behind the more objective appearance. And what is noumenal depends on the level of phenomena we're looking at. You know, even the etheric body is noumenal compared to what's happening in the dense physical vehicle. And when we look at the causal body from a certain point of solar point of view, we can say, hey, it's phenomenal. But then now take a look at the Buddhic plane for noumena and so forth. All right, so we've got three things here. The average man and the aspirant. We've got the disciple beginning to use soul forces. And then we've got the initiate who is going up into the area of life, which is under the increasing stimulation, influence, and regulation of the monad. So where do we really stand? You know, you can think about it, and you know, most of us are really struggling to be soul infused increasingly at each initiation. And well, the monad will come into the act, but our real effort is to become increasingly soul infused. And maybe some of the advanced students can begin to take in the energies of the impersonal energies of the spiritual triad via the Antikarana, which they are building around the time of the second initiation. Okay, another point. Also, now remember, take notes as to what interests you and what you may want to question, because it's too much to go back and say, now what was that, you know, and so do it in real time while it's happening if you have a question. Another point should also be emphasized here, and that is that the nature of these forces and energies and their use and control have always to be realized and worked out in full consciousness on the physical plane. All right, well, you know, that's the fallacy of saying as a modern human disciple, well, I just meditate and that's enough of service for me. I always had kind of a bias against that, but I do understand the tremendous power of meditation. But at the same time, you know, when the Second World War was going on, DK expected intensive meditation from his groups of students, but he also expected them to work tangibly in the war efforts on the outer plane. And he criticized when they were lazy about that. So there's plenty to do physically when we are disciples. You know, when we hold one of these conferences every year, it's a huge amount of work. It's a lot of it is physical plane work and, you know, just lugging and carrying and setting up and beautifying and all the rest of it. I say, okay, that is part of the physical expression of what we're realizing on the inner plane. The highest and the lowest must meet. It's the seventh ray age that we have coming, and we've just got to work it out physically. Maybe if you have a lot of earth signs or seventh ray and first ray, it's easier to do, but it's just got to be done by everyone eventually. Theory must become fact. This is so Scorpio, you know, it makes you bring that battle right down onto the physical plane. Theory must become fact, and the battles which take place on the subtle levels of the astral and mental planes must be realized in the brain consciousness. Well, okay. how many of us really do that, you know, and tangibly have these things descend. We are tested in Scorpio in all three levels of our being, and we can't leave the brain out of it, you know. It can't just be mental and astral. It's got to be etheric, physical as well. It is there that application is made. Now, you know, in this next 7 years, there's no place for lazy disciples. And I always am kind of amused. I have a big laugh when he says the major sin of the average initiate is sloth. Sloth, you know, like those sloths that hang from the trees, you know, and they don't want to move very much. Let's see if I can give that to you. I think there's a two. Okay, there he is. The major liability of the average initiate is sloth or lack of speed. Ponder on that. Oh. It's a good one to ponder on, absolutely. And basically, it's on page 156 of the Rays and the Initiations. We've got to organize for speed, he tells us, but working carefully. There's a lot to be done quickly. There's that old story about Master Moria rushing into a room, taking off one hat and putting on another and rushing out. It's kind of a symbol of someone who's got plenty to do on the physical plane, and each one of us should have plenty to do, I would say, on the physical plane. 7 years is not a lot, and it's the end of the marvelous era of the Forerunner, which has been going on now for since 1965. So that'll be 60 years, right? Is that it? I think so. 60 years, right? Wow. So we've just got 7 years left. And if we ever want to prove our discipleship, I know I say this all the time, so please forgive me. But if we ever want to prove our discipleship, it is now. It is now. Okay, so into the brain consciousness. It is there that the application is made. As these realizations and inner activities become practical parts of the disciple's life and their consequences become clear to his perception in waking consciousness, he knows what they lead to, right? They form in time part of his quality equipment. So basically, you know, what is stored in the causal body? All the things that we've worked out, and they are really virtues. And this quality equipment is virtue. Now, virtue doesn't really take place unless we act on what we think. When we have good thoughts and good intentions and all that, we act on it. We can really build virtues, build them into the causal body. It's like so obvious, but there's so much to keep us busy, and there's so much of interest in this teaching that we may forget to apply it as we should. He is, in reality, integrating and synthesizing experience in the three worlds and becoming a master through conscious mastering. Now, you know, there's no way to be a master unless we actually master the circumstances. And when DK talks about who a master is, he says he's a master as regards the three lower worlds, 18 lower subplanes, I suppose. He is not necessarily yet a master with regard to the mastery of the Buddhic, Atmic, Monadic plane, and so forth. There he is having his experience, but it's not a total mastery. So as we begin to master our experience in the three lower worlds, we're on our way. And many initiates of the fifth degree will be needed shortly. That sounds like a big demand. He grasps the fact that all that appears and all that happens is due to the circulation and constant mutation of force. Well, we have this thing called the law of mutation, and it's very purposeful. It doesn't mean random chaotic change. It's a constant re-aspecting of the various factors that have to learn to relate properly with each other. So there's always going to be a re-angling or aspecting of one to another. You know, this comes out in something we call the geometry of meaning. He discovers then how these forces interplay in his own experiences and nature, and grasps then the fundamental fact that only those forces which he himself can use and master in his own life as an individual can be employed by him in group activity and be used in the dispelling of world glamour. So it's very practical, isn't it? If you can use it, you can be used to dispel glamour or dissipate it. Usually the word dispel is used in relation to illusion and the application of the intuition. But okay, sometimes, you know, glamour is the all-inclusive term. Sometimes illusion is the all-inclusive term. Sometimes Maya is the all-inclusive term. So, you know, we can use the word dispel if we have to. So only those forces which he himself can use and master can be employed by him in group activity. Notice in group activity, not just as you work on your own glamours, that's important, of course, but group activity for the dispelling of the world glamour. And that's what we're trying to do. And boy, is that world glamour ever apparent these days. So, you know, we have it really rearing its ugly and egotistical head at this time. And well, it's inevitable, you know, Pluto is dragging everything to the surface before the hierarchy can externalize and the Christ reappears. So don't expect what Pluto brings to the surface to look very pleasant. It's not very pleasant, you know. So anyway, it might be expressed in illustration thus. Number one, through alignment and subsequent contact, the intuition is evoked, awakened, and used. Now, I want to give you a name for that intuition. Okay. And it's a wonderful name. Excites me when I think of it. Transcendental mind. It's a very Mercurian kind of thing related to pure reason and the Buddhic plane. And Buddhi and Mercury are the same in a way. So through alignment and subsequent contact, the intuition is evoked, awakened, and used. This is the great dispelling agency and pours down from the plane of the intuition, the plane of Buddhi, through the soul and the brain to the heart of the disciple. So intuition is directly and finally connected with the heart. Now, there are many hearts in a human being, you know, esoteric healing, it deals with this. Just the heart center, the heart and the head. The egoic lotus is a heart. And even finally, the monad itself is a 12-fold heart center, even though it's the center of will as far as what we're, as far as the way we live at this present time. So dispelling, and you know, you kind of look at something and all of a sudden it's different. You know, some kind of angle of vision just lifts and you see things with true eyes. You suddenly get it, you suddenly grok it, you suddenly, there it is. A veil has been lifted, and that is the dispelling process. This world illusion is gradually dispelled. Now, we go on. So the first factor is intuition and as a great dispelling agency. Now, most of us, you know, we say, well, I don't need dispelling. Everything's fine. I perceive well. But when the scales on our eyes, which are clear, drop away and we suddenly see things in a new light, we say to ourselves, what in the world was I seeing before? How limited that was. How unalive. Now look what I can see, you see. So it's often after the fact that you realize that there has been a dispelling going on and a great improvement in perception. Through alignment and subsequent contact, you know, it seems that begins the same way as this previous paragraph. Through alignment and subsequent contact, the energy of the soul is evoked, awakened, and used. It's like a little, you know, litany here. This is the great dissipating agency and pours down from soul levels, the higher levels of the mental plane, through the mind to the brain of the disciple, carrying illumination to the astral plane. And you know, what do we call this? The technique of light. And over here, what do we call it? The technique of the presence. And we will get into that. He gives us kind of a meditation on the technique of the presence, and we're going to deal with illusion because it's all part of this glamour book, you know. And we do study that, of course, you know, fairly intensively in the Moria Federation. But we'll be working together to find out the difference between dispelling illusion for the more mentally focused and dissipating glamour. You still have to be mentally focused, but perhaps less so than for the dispelling of illusion. So the dissipating of glamour, that's the second factor. The energy comes from the soul and operates through the mental levels and through the brain. Then, number three, these two types of spiritual energy work differently upon the forces of the personality. That's a term we have to get used to, the forces of the personality. Sometimes we just casually say, oh yeah, the energies of the personality, but let's keep the distinction. It's the energies of the soul and higher agencies as working through the personality. So these two types of spiritual energy, which basically are intuition and illumination. Let me put that down. Intuition and illumination work differently within the forces of the personality, and their purpose and activity have to be realized in the brain consciousness of the disciple as he works upon the physical plane. So make it real in the brain sense. We've got to do that, otherwise we're just in the realm of theory and we're not as effective as we otherwise might be. Then, and only then, can the light of the intuition and the light of the soul, and notice he really does discriminate between these two. There is intuition in the soul, but it is derivative from higher sources. And maybe the soul or angel provides part of it, but a more intense type of intuition is operating from the Buddhic plane and even also from the monadic plane, you know, where we're going to begin to get that intuitive, contemplative state of consciousness we call samadhi, which is sort of the highest realization in all of its different types. Then and only then can the light of the intuition and the light of the soul return to the astral plane through the conscious effort and dynamic, intelligent will of the serving disciple. And it looks like both are needed on the astral plane, the plane of sentiency. Remember, he loves that word sentient body rather than astral body. Ponder on these points as they outline your way and your service. Okay. Well, you know, there's a lot to discuss, and I don't want to go too far here. I've spoken maybe for a half hour, something like that. And yeah, I'm just going to call it right now. We're on page whatever. I don't know. Maybe I can find out, right? Maybe you can help me. We're on page 43. Okay, so somehow we begin here. And this is 43, just a couple of pages, but ought to be enough to discuss if you've been thinking about it, taking your notes, and so forth. It's the dispelling power of the intuition and the dissipating power of the illuminating light of the soul and what do they call it, kind of devitalizing energy of Maya, but he's not working against Maya. Inspiration devitalizes Maya. Okay. But anyway, I'm going to just say that this is the end of doggy number 82. And this is the 17th of August. And this is reading number 22. Is that it? Wow. Okay. And we're on, this was page 41 to 43. And we're going to start next time with number 83. And our academic reading will be 23. And it will be on the 24th of August. Hope this is not colliding with any full moons or something. Let's just see. And from page 43 on this. Ponder on these points where they outline your way and your service. So what I'm going to do is just copy this, you know, because it's easy to forget where you are. And I want to remember, but I have good cooperators who remind me where I am. Okay. So what have we just done? What have we just done? Not a lot. But we've talked about the average man, the disciple, and the initiate. We've talked about the need to really bring it down, all the inner states and conflicts and battles and realizations, bring it down into the physical brain. And only when we do that can we be really useful. Our quality is growing through our expression and not just by thinking about something. And only if we master forces can they really become virtues. The intuition is the dispelling agency. The illumination is the dissipating agency. These two work differently, and the forces of the personality has to do with whether we're really strongly mentally focused or whether we're somewhere in between, let's just say. Then we can return to the astral plane and really operate effectively in the work with glamour, which is now, I would say, so necessary. I don't know. I'm just trying to get my right numbers here, but I'm not getting them very well. Okay, so that should be number 4, basically. And, you know, sometimes I butcher the text a bit, but, you know, formatting is not my forte. Okay, pondering these points and so forth, and we'll take it up next time. And then he's giving us an organized plan through which we can approach the work and a kind of a skeleton outline. And today we will begin our real discussion, he says in the forthcoming section on page 43. Okay, friends, so that's that for the moment. And your thoughts on any of this?
You have a question.
Okay.
Several.
Let's see. Oh, okay. All right. Very good. So. All right. Good. I see there's a couple here. So here we are. Michael, it seems we have a strong glamour of stress in this experience now. Well, you know, there's good stress and there's bad stress. Stress blocks the correct response. Sometimes, yes. And sometimes it raises you to such a point of tension that you can actually accomplish more, says the DK, in a few hours than you can in many years. So, you know, let's just say a point of tension should be devoid of stress or distress. On the other hand, the personality likes its comfort, and one of the major heads of the Hydra is the comfort. So we have to ask ourselves, if we run away from stress, I never have, okay, you know, and maybe that's bad, I don't know. But if we want to avoid all stress, we're not going to be able to carry the burden, which at first will manifest as stress because the personality is just not used to it. Now, eventually we'll be able to take all that in stride, and Master Moria deals with the load of a camel and the load of a donkey. And, you know, he always compares people to animals. And he says that gets their attention. So he says, if you put the load of a camel on a donkey, you're going to have a very bad experience. The donkey will collapse and feel extreme stress. But every time, you know, this is very interesting. He says to carry the water pot of the Aquarian server is a demanding, heavy, burdensome, stressful experience. Once you get to the level of the law of service in the soul, that pot of water is on your head and it's just radiating out, and the sense of, boy, carrying that burden has been alleviated. So when he says, watch out, when an initiate contacts a disciple, the disciple feels all kinds of disturbance. When a disciple contacts an aspirant, the aspirant feels all kinds of a disturbance. And then when the aspirant is contacting the average person, you know, it's uncomfortable because the comfort is disrupted. So good stress, bad stress, it's got to be, you know, I remember, I love the movies sometimes, you know, that Neptune thing. And I remember the movie Patton. Now, Patton was somehow some reincarnated Roman general, you know, he had that past life recall stuff. He really had it. And I remember that he went onto a battlefield after a terrible, terrible battle, and he saw some of his men, or a man that had really stayed up night after night fighting the enemy and had prevailed somehow. And he leaned down and he gave the man a kiss, you know, because the man had accepted extreme burden upon himself. Burden me still more as I entered the beautiful garden, says Master Moria. And then I remember, my God, that rescue that took place of those Thai kids in the club, in the soccer club. And I was just thinking how those energies had to be controlled and how heavy they were. Anyway, that's my opinion about it. You say, I saw it defined as a source today as an incorrect perception. Stress was not even in our vocabulary 40 years ago, maybe in engineering and talking about materials, you know, and now it has taken such a loud role. How can we work with this? Well, okay, look, you know, don't collapse. Burden me still more as I enter the beautiful garden, but learn what you can carry. It's always going to be heavier and heavier. His yoke is easy and his burden light. He says, can you, now DK uses the word strain. He says, can you stand the strain of knowing? His burden is light. So, you know, how much can we take? I remember, you know, I've been in drama my whole life, and opera and drama and all that stuff, you know, that associates with the fourth-rate personality. And I remember a play by Arthur Miller called The Crucible. And this was all about the Salem witch hunts. You know, so many innocent people were really, you know, put to death on the basis of paranoia and revenge and all that horrible stuff. But there was a man in there, an old man who was a very first-rate man. And they had a method of putting people to death in those days that they called pressing. So they put a board on your chest or whatever, and then heavier and heavier rocks until you could not breathe and you died, okay? So in this incredible scene, there's this man called Giles Corey, very first rate, very full of principle, and he couldn't speak, so they lift a little bit, and they said, do you have something to say to us now? Because they wanted a confession. And he said, more weight, he said, more weight. So, okay, it takes all kinds, right? And that was what he demanded, because he was taking that kind of weight, a great initiation. And of him, it was said by John Proctor, the protagonist in this drama, it was a fearsome man, Giles Corey. So when I think about stress, okay, look, I admit it. I live a stressful life and, you know, lots of pressure on myself. Maybe it shows up, high blood pressure, whatever. My wife, Tuya, lives even more pressure than I do. You know, if everybody would take the weight on themselves that maybe they should, it might not fall so hard on some. I'm remembering Madame Blavatsky and her husband Olcott. My God, those two people were like the power center of this whole theosophical movement. And basically, what a life of pressure they lived. So look, you know, Master Moria says, it's in the book Heart, pressure is the law of existence. And that's my attitude toward it. You know, take it or leave it, adapt it to yourself, etc. Of note, for today's webinar, at one point, our group ended up with 51 of the designated 101. By the way, now we can get 151 in the other, a critical mass? Well, let's hope so. Past, perhaps. That sounds good. Which brought to mind how, as we work towards these ends, we may never know, through reaching that one more soul, if it may include, may indeed contribute to the larger picture. I agree with you, Suzette. The great critical mass of humanity, which must be galvanized into conscious action. Then I noted the one left, and thus we were again 50. Ah, okay. So symbolic, you know. And I suppose if you add us all together, we are still at 51 because we do have three staff members. We're still at 51. Okay, look for the numerical symbolism, of course. But what is important for us is to cross that threshold where we overcome the heads of the Hydra and are so living the transpersonal life and even the impersonal life of the spiritual triad that the normal personality concerns really fade out. It's like life after life, you have to work on this. It's difficult. Okay, but it has to be achieved. Okay, thank you. Please talk more a little bit about the difference between forces and energy. And intuition is directed to the heart of the head or the chakra to the heart. Well, there is this chakra called the heart and the head, and it's considered the major chakra of the head center. Intuition, buddhi, operates through the main heart center, and there's a monadic correspondence coming through the heart in the head. And the monad has that kind of intuition which sees all things as one, and then beyond that, we have the cosmic astral plane. So, and it generally, he uses forces and energies in so many different ways. Sometimes, you know, it's always the energy of the soul, the force of the personality. But on the other hand, he speaks of the Shambhala force and the Shambhala energy. Okay, so when a thing, when an energy is directed to a lower center with a specific intent and a specific focalization, we call it a force. If the general radiation of the energy goes forth, we call it an energy. So forces are willfully directed, in my view, from a higher center to a lower center. And, you know, other than that, you're just going to have to go through DK and see all the different ways that he uses it, sometimes very precisely, and sometimes, you know, just casually, so you can't really tell the difference between energies and forces. But we do remember this, soul energy, personality, force. But we might also talk about the force of the egoic lotus directed into the personality, which probably experiences that as an energy. Okay, now, I understand the importance of knowing the books, but you said it was totally different when the Arcane School, they told you to be more practical. There is a part in the, they didn't say to give all, you know, stop your studies. They just said, now let's turn theory into practice. Obviously, that's necessary, right? We've just been reading about that. They didn't say stop studying the high stuff. They just says, now you have certain great ideas. Let's make them real. Let's make them real in service. So that's how I understand. So practical, to meditate more basically, how does one become from a happy camel with a library on his back to a practical worker? This must be Anne here. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, Anne. So a happy camel. I'd rather be a happy camel than an overburdened donkey. And the old saying is that even a donkey can carry a library on his back, which means it's unassimilated. Now, camels carry maybe a heavy load, and he used the contrast there. Be careful how you assign work to other people and how you take it on yourself. Because if you're in charge of people and what they do, and you put too much on them, they'll collapse and they'll go away, okay? So, and as for yourself, if you take on too much and you don't have a good sense of proportion, you might collapse. You're well-intended, but it didn't work. So a happy camel carries the right load across the desert we call normal physical plane living. Across the desert, over all the seas, and through the fires that await him, you know, in the door. Here, let me look that up. There's a wonderful thing, and I'm just missing that last little bit. So let me look that up right here. Yeah. Over all the seas, and there just should be a couple of them. Here we go. Triple the call must be, and long it takes to sound it forth. Let the disciple sound the call across the desert, over the seas, and through the fires of mind, right, which separate him from the veiled and hidden door of initiation. Rule 3 for applicants. Remember, the individual application comes in these rules for applicants, and the 14 rules that are more advanced are for the group process. So anyway, look, you know, this is the age of Aquarius. This is coming. This is the age of burden bearing. Just a matter, who is Atlas? Atlas is holding the whole world up. What is the symbolism of it? It's probably the planetary logos, and in a way, the hierarchy that supports the planetary logos. So you're after the knowledge of the golden apples, and you're in Gemini, and you're up against your last labor, and you come upon Atlas, and Atlas is struggling to hold up the world, and you say, I will help uphold the world. I will help carry the burden of the world. Now, let me go to esoteric astrology on page 343, and for a very important, esoteric astrology, come on. Okay, so that's esoteric astrology, 343. There's one reference, and I don't know, maybe it's 342 by this time. I don't know. Let's see. Should be right here. I should have it. Oh. It's 330 something, isn't it? Okay. Let me try that again. 332. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Not 40. Look at Aquarius and what it says about it for the average, for the awakening, and for the true server. Okay, Aquarius, that's the age we're entering into. All things to all men, the burden of the self, little self, lower self. The self is a huge burden, really, and people are carrying it, and they're losing all kinds of opportunities. The next thing is for the awakening type, advanced man, dedication to the soul, the burden of humanity. And then finally, for the initiate and the higher disciple, the server of all men, the burden of the world. So look, you know, Aquarius releases Virgo from her load. Virgo is pregnant with the Christ consciousness, but Aquarius is carrying that burden until, in rule number 3, the laws of the soul, we get that perfectly poised carrying of the water pot right on top of the head. Now, all these men and women who carry water pots, and it is mostly women, are practicing for the day when they can completely fulfill the third law of the soul and carry that water pot, which is all the energies of the higher nature, of the thousand-petal lotus, with poise, carry it with poise, with balance, with divine understanding, all those nice Libran things. The ability to do that is coming up because Libra balance is increasing in the planetary horoscope. So basically what I'm going to do here is, every once in a while, emphasize it. This is the age into which we're going. No way out of burdens and no way out of the stressful or at least disturbing or, burdensome reaction that our comfort-oriented vehicles will experience when a heavier vibratory load is laid upon them. First, there's going to be that chafing and period of adjustment, and gradually, everything's going to work out much, much better. So I can only say this, get used to carrying burdens. There will be stress as you move to a higher point of tension, but as you really develop facility with it, what was stress through the process of accommodation will be alleviated and you will successfully operate at that new point of tension. Okay. Right. Camels and donkeys. Which are we going to be? Okay. Now, Catherine, I was intrigued by your comment about mutation, the law of mutation, as a re-aspecting of all of the related factors. See, think about it. If I'm a sun and here's a planet, and the planet is rotating, rotating, and then going around the sun, it's always going to get a different angle of what the sun can produce. That's what I call re-aspecting. And that wouldn't happen if the planet just stayed in the same place. Only the particular energy which was coming towards it at that time would be repeated, and you would not have the rounding out effect of the revolution of that planet around the central source. That's what I call re-aspecting. It all has to do with the law of mutation, and according to divine purpose and the fulfillment of the intended archetype, so will be the way we function under the law of mutation. Now, basically, you just mentioned the law of mutation. It's tremendously complex. It operates according to all kinds of laws about which we don't know much. But let's just say things are moving, and they're moving in such a way that a general rounding out and completeness is occurring. And that's the reason for a cycle. Different parts of the cycle operate in different ways. Go through the whole cycle, and you get the wholeness of that which the source can give. And, that's what I think of it that way. And that's how I can expand about it to say. Let's see if there is a place where he deals with blah, blah, blah. I can look up the word mutation, but I'm not sure. Law mutation is one. Maybe a law of expediency. There's something here, about mutation. Such cosmic events are governed by a great law of expediency evoked by the evolutionary process and incident also to zodiacal movement and its own interior mathematical conditioning. And here we go. This is why we can't grasp it. A subject of such vast dimensions and mystery that no life within our solar system has more than sensed its significance. The cyclic expression of life is dependent upon constant mutation and infinitely changing processes. So right there is, maybe is the place where I gathered this, but it does give the same idea. The law is of expediency. It's the third ray law, and the third ray is always changing position, much to the frustration of those on the seventh ray or first ray. It's always moving around, but there's a purpose behind this constant mutation, and the mutation operates according to arcane mathematical laws about which we can say nothing at this point. So things are moving, and the many, many changes give the completion and the rounding out. That's all I could probably say about that at the moment. All right, anything else to see? Like the difference, okay, what do we got here? I was intrigued, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, good. Like the difference between laser and diffused light. Okay, good. So laser light is in a way like a force or a canalized force. Canalized energy is like laser light, and it's polarized all in the same way. And there's all kinds of ways of manipulating force. And sometimes you really have to zap in with a very powerful directed beam in order to accomplish what you need. In reference to energy versus force, right. Okay, that's it. Understood. Thank you, Suzanne. Okay, if we see mutation, blah, 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 as a fractal, which basically it is a function, which basically it is a function, any change. It is a function, any change in that function changes the whole picture, fractal, immediately. A beautiful example on intuition and its application is the great mathematician, right, Ramanujan. There's a film on his life, The Man Who Knew Infinity. Yes, 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 yes. I had the book, and I was very interested. They brought him to Cambridge, was it, or Oxford or Cambridge, and he lived an unhappy life. I don't know how he met his end, but anyway, his thought was so vast, and he said that Brahma revealed great sheets of mathematical formulas to him, you know, some inner revelation from the higher planes, obviously extremely third ray in the mathematical aspect. So, yes, okay, so mathematically, I think what you're saying is correct. Vegetarian in World War II, Pluto on the sexual abuse of children by Catholic priests, oh, wow, 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 okay. Well, anyway, Ramanujan could not be, he had a few very devoted, intelligent members of the university culture in England, but in general, he couldn't make the interface, and he was in a way maladapted. I don't know how he met his end, but I felt there was some kind of suicide involved. I'm not sure. Suffice it to say, well, can you ever know infinity? Okay, but it's a good way of advertising it. And he was involved with Bertrand Russell and, maybe Whitehead was there too, and just people who were illustrious in the highest mathematical tiers of the educational system. But there were other things that prevented his happiness. Nevertheless, I really want to see this YouTube thing. Thank you for that. I've been looking for another step into understanding this man. As far as this horrible stuff going on, the Pope responded properly, calling it criminal. And I forget what the other word was. Criminal was the first word. And I, you know, it was also another great pejorative. And obviously, we've forced certain rules upon people, institutional rules, for which they were not ready. And as a result, they couldn't handle their impulses, and they entered what was easiest for them, which ended up being a perversion. And look, that's Pluto. And what did DK say about the church cleaning house and political systems cleaning house? Boy, are we seeing that today. You know, all the political system is really under pressure to reveal what it really is. And the church, well, it's extraordinary, the purging of the priesthood that is going on at this time. And these people really have to be prosecuted. They can't hide behind the church or the fact that they are priests. They've abused their vows, basically. And they've corrupted other people, young people, and traumatized them and so forth. So it, you know, this is the right Pope to deal with this. I think the previous pope who resigned, and was it Ratzinger or something like that? I forget his last name. Anyway, the German, he just didn't want to deal with it. Not in the same way. No. So in comes a real humanitarian, and let's see what can happen as a result. It's part of the Plutonic house cleaning. You've got to have house cleaning before Vulcan can assert itself, the spiritual will of the soul. And the Vulcan, you've got to make sure that that will does not animate all kinds of filth that still remains in our aura. So we've got to clean the house under Pluto, and then the real spiritual will can come in. Okay, you know, it's a terrible thing, but you know, and you never know the karma in all this, but it's just plain wrong, and it is cowardly and advantage-taking, and look, there's a terrible price to pay for it. There will be. Okay, thank you, everybody. Okay, you know, just my take on things. I don't stand by it as being ultimate in any sense, just to offer some ideas, and you have your own good ideas and so forth. So that's it for the moment. And anything else, BL or Joe, that you see that I'm missing? Am I missing anybody?
No, I don't see anything else.
Okay, we're good, you know, and now I think, well, look, you know, we work subjectively and objectively, and we've been given ways of working, and these ways are not lightweight. They are heavy and impactful if we do them correctly. Now, you know, there's a lot of dangers in these glamour meditations. We just go into that and say, okay, I'll do that. But that was the group that really suffered. And, you know, it just never could quite be ready for doing what Master DK hoped, because glamour is so ubiquitous in all of our lives. And these things get animated, and we don't even know that we've got them, and they prevent our effectiveness. But look, we've been given the ways of working, so we continue to work in those ways, and you know, persistently, and adding our little bit to the clarification and the bringing of truth, to the astral plane. Now, that, as a matter of fact, I've decided, you know, this time we'll meditate on, what do we meditate on here? We're going to meditate on lying, basically, on untruth. That will be our work for today. We're seeing so much of it, you know, so much of the, Right. I get little notes while I'm doing this, you know, so let's see, where are we here? Formula for the dissipation. There it is. Okay. So, you know, we'll talk about untruth. Is it the same as lying? Well, you know, for all practical purposes, it is. And people are defending their personality and their little world of comfort that they don't want to have disrupted, and they'll say anything to prevent the truth that hurts from penetrating. Our political life is full of it at the moment. And is it somebody that wanted to speak? Joe, did you? Okay, I just saw your...
Okay,
your,
yeah, you have one more comment that just came in if you wanted to address it.
And do I? That's the question. Let's see. And from whom is that? Is it Stacia?
No, it's from, I'm probably going to say her name wrong, Veronique.
Okay, Veronique. Right. Okay. Right. Can you give more information on Pluto? Well, okay. It is an esoteric planet, which is non-sacred. It's the great first ray planet. It's the planet related to the underworld and the lowest levels of the astral plane, but also, it is interesting, Pluto had the helmet of invisibility. So much of what Pluto is goes on beneath the surface. And it's really not so terribly active in an esoteric way, unless you are a student of esotericism. And then it really works at major eliminations in the life of the student. Now, I just go to Rule 11. In Rule 11 for Disciples and Initiates in the Rays of Initiations, and you find in the introduction to Rule 11 are a bunch of things you've got to end. It's the great Terminator, you know, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is being the Terminator. He's being very Pluto. It's the Lord of Death. Well, but as DK says, Pluto never kills the consciousness. It kills the obstructions to the consciousness. So you've got to eliminate sentimentality. You've got to eliminate strictly personal ties between you and other group members, strictly personal. It's got to be soul ties. You've got to eliminate the need for recognition. This is a big one. People, you know, they don't even know it, but they want to be recognized in some way, maybe not by the outer world, but by the soul, or maybe they want to be recognized by the hierarchy or a master or whatever. And finally, how to speak correctly and eliminate things that violate the principle of occult silence, which is not what we think it is, because he tells us that a lot of us would be better off if we talked more about the truth and the teaching in the right way. So it's not just a question of keeping your mouth shut in order to achieve initiation. So when you've got to throw something out of your system, when you got to get rid of the poison, when you have to clean house, when the dregs of the lower aura are really contaminating your thought, you got to clean them out. Pluto is your planet. And the general house cleaning that humanity is going through at the moment all over the place, and especially in political and church life, is the work of Pluto, and those eliminations have to take place before we can get together and in our massed intent demand the coming of the Christ on the wave of that demand. He will come, but we have to fulfill certain responsibilities first, and they're not easy. So anyway, and hi, Stacey, I want to say, you know, I know you're driving along, but nice that you could listen, and yeah, don't increase to infinite velocity there, you know. Slow speed is okay sometimes. Glad you could be with us. Okay, friends, well, I think it's time for me to really go ahead and now offer this meditation, with which we are, of course, now quite familiar. Right. And isn't that nice? There's 51 of us, so that's the majority, right? Or maybe there are, I don't know. It doesn't make any difference, because some of us are appearing more than once. Okay. Excuse me. So we begin. In the silence, we gather and come together. You can feel the gathering of the energy. Now we use, I'm going to go relatively quickly because there's another webinar coming up quite shortly, not a webinar, but a broadcast. So have to move on. The protective formula, you know, the divine cross here, as we involving the eyes, the lighted cross of protection. He wouldn't give it to us if we didn't need it. As a soul, I work in light. And darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. So each of us has that lighted cross, and the whole group has that lighted cross of divinity. Now, we know about the three lights. We lift from below, light of matter, and bring it to the mental plane where we merge it with the light of mind, the ordinary mind over which we have presently some control. The light of matter and the light of mind. This allows us to have vitalized thinking, clear, logical, filled with mental understanding. Two lights on the mental plane merge as one. Now we call upon the light of the soul. There is soul light, as it were, hovering above the head. The causal body, egoic lotus, does have a time-space location. And we bring that soul light down. Infuse it with the other two lights, matter, mind, and the light of the soul, fusing on the mental plane. Three are now one. This is our power from which the beam goes forth, discovering and dissipating. And together we will say, the light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. We're going to send that beam forth onto the astral plane in our imagination. We'll visualize the great searchlight, which we as a group have created, turning its light upon the astral plane. It reveals and it destroys. So we project that beam out there, really in there in a way. Something like the horn of the unicorn for the group. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth. The inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. So our beam is extended into the imagined astral plane of glamour, fogs, mists, veils, miasmas, all that. Our beam goes forth. And a pause follows here because we want to invoke the spiritual will and strengthen our beam. So let's think about that. And we say, realizing the strengthened, the will strengthened beam with power. Upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. All these glamours are related. Separatism, egotism, personality, lying. Untruth, you know. Think for a moment about the effect upon the consciousness of humanity that arises from lying. Think about it. Now, we're going to use our words of power in order to deal with this glamour, which is so prevalent in high places. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of lying, of untruth. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour of lying from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind this glamour of lying, perpetuating untruth, destroys the life of the glamour. And we're going to have, as we visualize the light, our beam of light penetrating the glamour and weakening it and dissipating it, we're going to have 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose as this work is seen to be proceeding. 5 minutes of meditation, actively using our beam, the words of power, dissipating, casting out, preventing, destroying this glamour of lying. Here we go. we can continue to work with this. We will. It's so important today. We withdraw our beam, the revealing and destroying beam, back onto the mental plane, into its source of triple light. Our searchlight is shut off. We will return and we will try to think the truth, speak the truth, and act on the basis of the truth we really see, and perhaps then humanity will move forward more truly upon the path. It will not be misled and captivated by false presentations of reality. So let us finally then sound the Om three times, once for each of our vehicles, mental, emotional, physical, and conclude this little service that we have accomplished. Oh. Basically, we're clearing all the vehicles and having them truly represent the soul and the still higher energies. So I want to thank you for participating tonight. This will be available before long. And I'm not sure whether it's on Makara or YouTube or both. We'll try to keep you notified about this. And some of you are in the Blue Rose Sisterhood. For Shiva Brothers, and in just 20 minutes, we have another broadcast where we're going to be dealing with the Shambhala names of Mary, who ultimately is the Mother Earth, ultimately, in the higher sense. And so we will, you can use the YouTube link, or if you have trouble with that link, which is in the chat box right now, you can go to the YouTube Moria Federation Esoteric Education, and the program should be up. It is a video of the one we did last year on the same subject. The names right now are not changing every day. The names change accordingly every year. Thank you for your presence. Appreciate your work. Lots of love from all of us, and from Olivia, Tuya, and myself. Lots of love and encouragement as we tackle this world problem we call glamour. See you soon. Bye-bye.